Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, we got a fun 8 o'clock hour for you here on this Monday morning. First off, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. Man, I just want to say thank you to everybody that we got to see over the weekend, you know, starting really with Friday. I mean, we had a great show Friday morning from Northwest Parts and Equipment in Columbia Falls, and then a great event at Two Brothers Cafe. Esmeralda and Besnick with the cafe were so nice to host us there. An incredible Lincoln Reagan Trump dinner in Kalispell Friday night. And then I was at, man, three events in Libby, starting at the Mustang Bakery Saturday morning. And then, of course, we got to see our friend Fawn and a whole bunch of other great listeners at North Point Bar and Grill in Eureka on Saturday night. And so I made it back into the studios, and later on in the 9 o'clock hour of the show, we'll have the phone lines open for you if you got some topics you want to cover this morning. Plus, I think Iowa Senator Joni Ernst and Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy are going to drop in and see us. They're on the way to Sydney and Glendive, Montana, here later this morning, but I think they might even pop in and say hi to us as well. But for this 8 o'clock hour of the show, this is great. We've got both the Democrat candidate and the Republican candidate for the Public Service Commission for seat 2 on the Montana PSC. We've got Susan Bielow, the Democrat candidate, and State Senator Brad Molnar, the Republican candidate for that seat 2, which effectively goes basically, if I remember right, the district goes from roughly Big Horn County through Yellowstone County all the way to Four Corners in the Bozeman area. But yeah, as you guys know, there was redistricting for the PSC, for the Public Service Commission, and so all the district boundaries have been redrawn. So it's kind of some crazy drawn districts here with the way they're shaped up. But this can be a great opportunity to get a window into one of the races for the PSC for seat 2, and then I think those of you that might live in some of the other PSC districts can also get an idea of, okay, here, this is some of the issues that are coming up in these races for the Montana Public Service Commission. So anyway, let's see. This is going to be informal. I mean, you could call it a debate, you could call it a forum, but really, you guys know how we roll around here. We're informal. We like to take caller questions and comments. If you've got a quick question or comment and want to jump in on the conversation here, I do have a 2024 election guide here from the Montana Free Press, where they did a profile on both candidates. State Senator Brad Molnar, longtime state lawmaker from Laurel, who previously served on the PSC from 2005 to 2012. He is the Republican candidate for PSC seat 2. And Susan Bielow, a former energy specialist with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, who teaches courses related to energy efficient and renewable energy technologies at Gallatin College in Bozeman. Susan Bielow is the Democrat candidate for seat 2. We'll get a chance to meet both of them right after the break, and then we'll go from there. It's just going to be a nice laid-back conversation, debate, forum, whatever you want to call it, a chance to hear from both candidates in that race. And then, like I say, in the 9 o'clock hour of the show, we'll open up the phone lines if you got other topics you want to cover here on Monday's Montana Talks.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. The path to power in the House of Representatives isn't direct. Patchwork of districts hopscotching from northern Maine to rugged Alaska might decide the House majority. Let me decode the signs to watch to understand which party may run the House. Early on, look to see if Democrat Jared Golden holds his district in rural Maine, and if Democrats flip several seats in New York. That's a signal it might be a good night for Democrats. But if Republican Austin Terrio beats Golden and the GOP holds its own in the Empire State, it could be a Republican night. But the West could dictate ultimate control of the House. There are multiple swing seats in the Golden State. It's possible Democrats could flip 3 seats there alone. Also in the West, if freshman Republican Lori Chavez Dreamer wins in Oregon, Republicans could hold their majority. But if Democrat Marie Glusenkamp Perez holds her seat in Washington State, that likely points to a Democratic House. And Democrats may also hold the House if Mary Peltola prevails in Ruby Red, Alaska. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Democracy 24.
Transgender health care for children. Governor Tim Walz and Senator J.D. Vance couldn't be more divided. This summer, Senator J.D. Vance introduced a bill that makes it a felony to provide puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones to kids. Last year, Governor Walz issued an executive order and signed into law a bill in Minnesota that he says makes it a refuge for adults and children seeking such care.
Protecting and supporting access to gender-affirming health care is essential to being a welcoming and supportive state for the community.
But globally, the tide has been turning. Several European countries that have been considered on the forefront of gender care for kids are reversing course. Still, most major U.S. medical associations and organizations support adolescent transitioning. A Gallup poll in June shows Americans are also divided, with more than half thinking it's immoral to change genders, but 6 in 10 Americans oppose banning gender-affirming care for minors. In Washington, Alexandria Hoff, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, I got to tell you guys, this is so cool. You know, during that little break there, it's, you know, I'm hearing laughter, I'm hearing good conversation, and these are two candidates that are running against each other. It's just so nice to see people, you know, doing it the Montana way where you can laugh and get along and yet even, you know, be running against each other in a big campaign here. Okay, well, let's start. State Senator Brad, we were going to flip a coin, but Senator Molnar said, nah, ladies first. And so, Susan Bilo, first off, welcome to the program here. And yeah, with about a minute or two here, feel free to introduce yourself to voters and tell us why you wanted to run for the PSC.
Yes, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for the invitation to be here. And welcome everyone, Susan Bilo. And Brad and I are both discovered we're both from Indiana. That's what we were laughing about, trying to just share some common knowledge about the state. But yes, my name is Susan Bilo, and I have lived in Montana since 2009, and I'll just a little about my background. I have close to 30 years of energy program, project, and policy experience. Energy is my chosen profession. It's my passion. I currently teach it for Gallatin College, but in the past, I have worked as an energy specialist for a state energy office as well as the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, as you heard. But I also worked as an energy specialist for Montana State University Extension, where I did solar, thermal and solar electric workshops throughout the state, went everywhere, helping residents determine, is this something that could work for me? And that was pretty powerful, getting out there, you know, because a lot of people can't go to some city. So I went out. We have such a big state. And currently, at Montana State University for Gallatin College, I teach energy efficient technologies and renewable energy for an HVAC workforce program, because that's really important for students to be up on some of the, you know, get factual updated information on what's going on with energy and some of the technologies that they need to be aware of so they can do a good job for their company and stay in business. And I've been very involved in policy, mostly working to try to raise Montana's arbitrary 50 kilowatt net metering cap. Because for home, that's plenty big, more than you need. But for big businesses, maybe a farm or a ranch, they need a little more electricity than that. And for them to be net metered, right now there's a cap. And that's a barrier to Montanans. And I believe Montanans have the right to produce their own electricity if they want to. But I'm running for the PSC because I'm aware of some of the barriers to people making their own choices. And we are seeing unprecedented rates in our increases in our energy rates. And that's unjust as far as I'm concerned. The PSC is supposed to be Montana ratepayers' first line of defense against unjust rate increases. And the reason I call it unjust is because there are more affordable options that aren't being considered right now. And energy has become very political. But Montana has world-class wind energy. And right now, if you took away all the subsidies from renewables as well as fossil fuels, it's cost competitive and oftentimes cheaper, even with battery storage. And right now, Northwestern isn't suggesting that, and the PSC isn't saying, hey, you need to consider that. because that would help keep our bills more affordable, putting that into the mix. I'm not anti-fossil fuels, but we have a beautiful resource here that we can use to help keep our bills more affordable.
I know there's some people out there that are saying, well, what's net metering? We can touch on that a little bit later in the hour here. But, yeah, Susan Bielo, great to hear your introduction and describing why you got into this race. State Senator Brad Molnar, I know if folks have been listening to our program for some time, they've gotten a chance to hear you as a state senator and as a former member of the Public Service Commission. But, yeah, what would you, for those who aren't familiar with your background, tell us why you wanted to run for the Public Service Commission once again.
Well, I've been on the doors a lot. And one of the two questions I get the most is, aren't you a little old to be looking for a career? And I am. I'm not looking for a career. And the other one is, I understand you're a senator. Why would you give up a Senate seat to be on the PSC? And the answer is fairly clear. There are three big issues at the state level that will be extremely detrimental to energy policy and therefore the people that pay for that, which is primarily residential, and two federal that will be absolutely crushing. And I fought those fights before. I know how to do them. I've testified before FERC. You have to be okay to do that as a professional. And it's affecting not just Montana. It's affecting the entire Intermountain West. The rate increase that we just saw, the 28%, which is actually 24 if you take out the PCAM, but that doesn't make any real difference. 24 is still historic high, but it's across the Intermountain West. I've got an article. I was going to look up the date and time. People could Google it. From 2020 till now, if you take a look back to 2000, the line's almost steady for electricity cost. Nationwide in 2020, it skyrockets. And it stays about the same, 2020, 21, 22, 23. And that is because these, as we just had our rate increase, other states had theirs in 2020, 21, 22, 23, and they're huge. And a lot of it comes from renewables and the mandates and the hidden cost within. And I'm sure that positive. Susan and I not only disagree on how to pronounce your last name, everything else is on the table as well. And I can give examples as we go through that. But my skill set, the things I know the best, is where I should be in state government to do the most good for the people of Montana, not only short term, but long term. And that's why I jumped ship out of the Senate. You know, I was 90% popular in my district. So if I wanted to be a senator, I would have been. I want to be a commissioner again, go back under the radar, put my head down, and do a job so that 4 years from now, if possible, I will make our energy policy as level and fair as possible.
Yeah, and for those who aren't tracking, the Public Service Commission oversees electric utilities like Northwestern Energy, that just one of the utilities that they oversee here in Montana. Of course, do more than just electricity. All right, quick break. We'll have them throw a question to each other after this.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. The path to power in the House of Representatives isn't direct. Patchwork of districts hopscotching from northern Maine to rugged Alaska might decide the House majority. Let me decode the signs to watch to understand which party may run the House. Early on, look to see if Democrat Jared Golden holds his district in rural Maine, and if Democrats flip several seats in New York. That's a signal it might be a good night for Democrats. But if Republican Austin Terrio beats Golden and the GOP holds its own in the Empire State, it could be a Republican night. But the West could dictate ultimate control of the House. There are multiple swing seats in the Golden State. It's possible Democrats could flip three seats there alone. Also in the West, if freshman Republican Lori Chavez Dreamer wins in Oregon, Republicans could hold their majority. But if Democrat Marie Glusenkamp Perez holds her seat in Washington State, that likely points to a Democratic House. And Democrats may also hold the House if Mary Peltola prevails in Ruby Red, Alaska. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
If there's one thing every journalist covering politics knows about, it's the art of damage control. That's what President Biden is doing right now. Now, this started when Kamala Harris picked a fight with Ron DeSantis because he wasn't taking her calls as vice president about the cleanup after Hurricane Helene and the devastation in that state. And she called him selfish. DeSantis came back and said, it's not about you. Kamala, and he didn't know she had called. Okay, except that NBC quoted a DeSantis aide saying Kamala was trying to reach out and we didn't answer. Along comes Joe Biden, and he says, you know, I just talked to Governor DeSantis. He's been very gracious. He's been very cooperative. He's doing a great job. Uh-oh, undercutting the vice president. Now, Joe Biden is putting out the word that he didn't know about the back and forth. It was in the headlines for days. He gets clips every day. Kind of hard to believe. With your Media Minute, Howie Curtis, Fox News.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks.
Well, one thing I'd love to do here is we've got both the Democrat and Republican candidates for Public Service Commission seat 2 here with us for this full 8 o'clock hour of the show here. In absentee ballots just got mailed out Friday. In fact, I got home Sunday night, and there's my ballot waiting for me, and I can't wait to fill that out and turn it in and hand carry that into my local elections office. But one thing I'd like to do is give them both an opportunity to pose a question to their opponent. Because sometimes that elicits good back and forth and a response. But if you want to jump in on the conversation as well, if you have a quick question or comment for the two candidates here, you can give us a ring, 406-294-0970. Or even more easy is you can send us a message on the Montana Talks app if you have a quick question or comment there. And I can quickly read that on the air and then have the candidates weigh in. I thought the most important question to throw out from my perspective is, you know, we've got the Held v. Montana lawsuit that turned in the climate kids lawsuit, as it's been referred to. Now, some of the very same activists that are pushing the Held v. Montana lawsuit are also trying to basically force the Public Service Commission to integrate climate change concerns into every regulatory decision-making process. And so I wanted to get the take from both of you on how you think if the PSC should or should not be basically integrating so-called climate concerns into every regulatory decision-making process. Since we started with Susan Bielow in the last segment, Senator Molnar, let's start with you.
Okay. First of all, small correction. Held is not against the PSC. Held is trying to make the DEQ.
That's separate. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so they're saying the DEQ can't cite a plant in Montana unless they consider the environment. Well, what does consider the environment mean? Basically, if they don't go with that, then they get sued on every decision. The other one is on the PSC. And to where we would have to consider. They want us to write a rule to consider. Well, currently the law says that we can't consider externalities. So they're asking us to do something that's against the law. So, but let's assume that they win that in court. And before the same judge, I'm sure they would. So now you can't cite a gas plant for a regulating reserve or base load or whatever in Montana. So you have to go out of state. That would be DEQ. But PSC can't allow a contract for out of state. So you have no energy other than renewable or whatever they decide they're going to allow. Well, if you don't allow a plant in Montana that's going to bifurcate, provide, say, 50 megawatts to Montana and by contract 50 megawatts to Colorado, you're immediately into the Commerce Clause. You're going to get struck down. But it so ties up every decision to where you have to consider this one externality. Well, there's a lot of externalities. And if we do that and we get away from affordable, reliable, used, and useful, which are all parts of the criteria that we must use by the law, then we can throw in everything. Okay, so in the back, let's assume Susan wins. In the back of her mind, she's got her climate, you know, her whole 30 years is in renewable. So in the back of her mind, she has that. So she can vote it, but she can't say it, and it can't be part of the record. So when you take it to the courts and they say, this is what we're going to allow, and we didn't allow it, you know, because of environmental concerns, then our record is incomplete.
So you're saying, then that you would oppose this idea that climate concerns should be integrated into every regulatory decision making process at the PSC.
Well, we're quasi judicial, and I oppose any law, as any judge would at any level in the Supreme Court, that you must consider this one thing. No, what's the record? What's the argument? What are we going to do? Not use the Supreme Court to state a policy, but rather an individual concern, which is basically what they're supposed to do for standing. When you start saying you must consider this externality, then I can say, okay, I will vote for this project. It's in my district. And he will vote for a project in his district. We're now tribal. We're not the Montana Commission. If you want to talk externalities, how about every time a windmill blade goes around, it adds to the national debt, and that's going up $1 trillion every 100 days. That's an externality. No, for the people of Montana, used, useful, affordable, and reliable. You get away from that, and you're into a bunch of circular arguments, and that should never be the case.
And then over to Susan Bilo, the Democrat candidate for Public Service Commission seat 2. I see here in this Montana Free Press candidate profile that you responded to them by saying that the PSC must address climate change in its decision-making to address ratepayer costs as well as societal and ecosystem health. So that would lead us to believe that yes, you believe that climate should be integrated into every decision-making process from the PSC.
I think it should be considered. And I know that most people, when they hear about climate change, hear about it on an international scale or a national scale. But the Montana University System put together in about eight years ago what's called the Montana Climate Assessment. And this was not an ivory tower down type of thing. It was Montanans who their jobs, the economy for their community is based on having, you know, water in our rivers for fishing guides, rafting, water for agriculture, irrigation, forest, ag producers said, hey, we are on the ground. We're already seeing some of the impacts of the increased temperatures. And Montana is actually warming a little more than we are nationally. And so many experts in the university system, you know, ecosystem sciences, fire science, all of that, they took a look at, okay, these folks in Montana have asked us to take a look at what are the impacts we're seeing now and how does that impact us economically and what can we do to adapt to it? So even if you don't believe in climate change, it took a look at, okay, what are some things we can do? For example, ag producers right now don't have enough water late summer, early fall for some of their crops. So what they can do is adjust maybe what they're growing. So anyways, that's very powerful. And I do believe in the science for climate change. Now, as far as the PSC is concerned, I think they need to consider that because right now, some of the technologies like wind and solar that help tackle that also can reduce our cost for electricity. And if you take a look at a financial firm that is not biased, you know, politically anyway, they take away all the subsidies for renewables, all the subsidies that exist for fossil fuels. And when you look at that right now, utility scale wind and solar, even with battery storage, which makes it available 24/7, is cost competitive and cheaper. And we have those resources here in Montana. So even if you don't believe in climate change, the economics are there. And why not use these resources? And
so, well, it sounds like one, so you clearly disagree, both of you, in terms of should the PSC make climate change a part of every decision-making process under the PSC. But it sounds like one thing we can all agree on is that the cost of electricity, the cost of energy have gone up dramatically, especially, I mean, just in the last 3 to 4 years, nationwide electricity inflation is up 30%. That's nationwide. Yeah. So it's happening all across the country. What would you say the reason those electricity prices are going up nationwide? Well, what's causing that electricity inflation in particular?
Well, it's a variety of things. For example, in Montana, we do have a lot of fossil fuels and the cost is going up. Coal and natural gas is more expensive. And let me give you an example. Idaho Power, next door, very conservative state. They are proactively investing in utility scale wind and solar with battery storage. They're expanding their transmission grid so they can import cheap wind generated electricity from Wyoming. And their bill, electric bills are half of ours, right? They are already investing in technologies that can keep their citizens' bills more affordable. And so I think in Montana, Northwestern Energy kind of wants to keep us siloed. So they, it's almost like they want to keep their own little energy kingdom, because they are guaranteed a rate of return on facilities. They don't care if it costs more. They're guaranteed a return on cost for fuel. Can't make money off the wind or the sun. That fuel is free.
Brad Molnar, your take, the Republican candidate for the PSCC2, why do you think that electricity costs have gone up? Nate, you talked about just the Rocky Mountain West, but nationwide electricity inflation is up 30% in just the last 3 to 4 years alone here. What's driving those hikes?
Well, a couple of things. I'll start off by saying I disagree with everything you said based on the facts of the matter. Okay, for example, North Dakota PUC just wrote a letter to Xcel, their large coal plant. Please don't close down. We can't run this state without your base power. You lose Colstrip, we have no base power. You got to replace it with something else. That something else will be natural gas. Well, that's being sued. Okay, so nationwide, in all of the RTOs or outfits like ours, which don't have an RTO, if a coal plant or a natural gas plant wants to be expanded, built, large maintenance costs are sued. Well, they're, before a judge like Judge Seeley, who did the Held case, you're going to lose. So you spend, you know, $50 million in legal and 5 years to lose and you have nothing, or do you take the subsidy for wind, stick it in your pocket, and let somebody else worry about it? MISO, which is what MDU is under, is telling their members, quit shutting down coal. Where the heck are you going to get your baseload from? Okay, so these are the nuts and the bolts of the question. Let's take, for example, Susan has talked about wind and batteries being competitive.
Tell you what, hold that thought, Senator Molnar. We got to take a quick break here in just about a minute. Hold that thought. We'll come back to both of you after the break. Let's sneak in a quick phone call here. Matt in Billings, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, good morning to all you folks. Thanks for doing this. I have a quick comment here. Living in the Big Sky Country for 40 years plus, I don't find windmills pretty at all. And per John Tester's campaign commercials, he's saying that Tim Sheehy is not qualified to be in that position for and represent Montana because he's not from Montana. Both of you folks are not from Montana. So what would your comments be back to John Tester?
That's pretty funny. I appreciate that, Matt. Yeah, the Big Sky Country, that beautiful skyline, the open space, that's part of what we love about Montana. Do we want to dot that skyline with windmills, right? That's a good question there. Matt, thanks for the call. Quick break. Refill your coffee cups and back with both the Democrat and Republican candidates after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Democrat candidate Susan Bielo running for Public Service Commission C2 and State Senator Brad Molnar, the Republican running for Public Service Commission C2, joining us here in this 8 o'clock hour of the show. If you have a quick question or comment, give us a call. 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. Francis in Big Fork next. Francis, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, I like to know how much the batteries cost and how much the blades cost. Where do you bury them? And where are you going to get, if they shut the coal strip down, where are they going to get the electricity to run them? Because in the wintertime, if it's cold, they have to have electricity to keep the motors running warm.
Well, and we've had 40 below temperatures in February for long stretches in February, and the sun ain't always shining and the wind ain't always blowing. And then we've been forced to have to import very expensive power for the first time ever. Montana's always been historically an energy exporting state, but because we've done away with more of this reliable power, coal, gas, et cetera, and become too reliant on renewable forms of energy. That's why we've had to import power. That's a good question to kind of throw right towards Susan Bielo, the Democrat candidate for the PSC here. That was something that Matt in Billings kind of touched on as well, because he was looking at, hey, we've got open space, big sky country. We don't want to see our horizon dotted with these windmills, was his argument. But then on top of that, we've invested heavily as a state into so-called renewable energies, wind, solar, et cetera. We've significantly ramped up over the past two decades on that front. And yet now we've seen double-digit rate hikes. And so it sounds like you're opposing some of the more baseload reliable power like coal and natural gas that's going to be needed to back up the wind and the solar.
I am not opposed to fossil fuels. I think when we need new generation, we need to give renewables fair consideration. Because in the past, there was always the excuse, it's too expensive, and the sun doesn't always shine, and the wind doesn't always blow. And that, those were valid concerns. But the cost argument no longer exists, as I explained. And then we now have batteries. There's lithium ion that utilities now are using to provide a backup for any time there's an outage, or if you're using intermittent renewables, and that's more for a daily basis. But there are now, there's a factory in West Virginia that's called Form Energy, and they're developing an iron, open-air iron battery that can hold up to 10 megawatts of power. It can provide power for like hundreds of hours. And there are utilities that are investing in batteries, whether it's for fossil fuels or renewables. For Colstrip, for example, that went down during our last cold snap. Batteries would have been very beneficial to us. Texas, when they've had some of these significant severe weather events, battery storage that they have invested in allowed them to use that energy to where they didn't have to buy open market electricity and buy it at really large prices. And Western States Transmission, I was just on a webinar, that's a co-op actually, and they serve Colorado, Nevada, and Wyoming. And what they're doing is, and we need gas for backup, but what they're doing is they're starting with renewables because it can keep their costs lower. They're investing in the day-to-day lithium ion and the larger storage, and then they're taking a look at, okay, we're also going to invest in efficiency, demand-side management, distributed resources, and now we know we need some gas. It might not need to be a gas peaker plant like we have in Laurel, which is one of the most expensive plants you can build, but they know, yes, we need some natural gas to serve as that backup if some of these other things, we have such a severe weather event that we need more electricity. And so don't put all your eggs in one basket approach that keeps bills affordable and is a reliable.
Yeah, Senator Molnar, your thoughts particularly on, this question of we have expanded so-called wind and solar and these other things, and yet look at how our electricity rates have increased, and especially with the Green New Deal at the federal level, we've seen 30% electricity inflation just in the last 3+ years alone. While there've been attacks on Colstrip, while there've been attacks, they're trying to shut down this natural gas power plant right now. The same climate activists,
right? And it's built, and they're saying no, tear it down, I guess, or do something with it. The fact of the matter is that people like myself, and say those that push heavily for renewables, is we don't even agree on how to figure the cost. Okay, for example, the way that we were told at ETIC by various environmental groups is it's a simple formula. You got your capital requirements to build windmills, say, or solar. How much to build it? What's your profit margin? Okay, that's your CapEx. Then you got your operation and maintenance. So the cost per megawatt that comes out of that is, well, who cares? You now have a windmill standing in the middle of a wheat field that's not producing anything. You still need a transmission line. You still need a substation. You still need to attach in. If you take and add all of what, and then you still need a backup. So now you got two systems for one electron, and you also need a regulating reserve because coal or hydro, if you look at them on a graph, is just flat. You're just putting out electricity. Wind is more like load. It's like this. Even with a steady wind, the chatter is like this. It's like a leaf on a quaking aspen. So you need 3, 4, 5 backups to try and get there. And you need massive subsidies. And if you take in January, we were 22 below zero. Wind didn't work. And solar didn't work. In Bozeman, they were 25 below. On the higher line, they were 45 below. Well, anything below 20 below, wind is shut off. So it doesn't work. Okay, if you went with battery storage, and I had a presentation from the people you're talking about with iron. If you take that, and if you wanted to replace the 3 days, 4 days almost, that we had no solar and no wind anywhere in the Intermountain region that we could buy, and if you replace that with batteries, the batteries are cheaper per megawatt. You can get a 400 megawatt battery that puts out 100 megawatts for 4 hours with a system, the hookups and the everything goes with it for $176 million.
Well, and frankly, we see more electricity needed every single day. There's data centers alone that are consuming massive amounts of electricity. So we frankly shouldn't be shutting off any source of electricity. I think we can all agree on that one here. Well, Owen and Bozeman, maybe this is a topic we might find agreement on. I don't know. What are both of your views on nuclear energy? Why has Montana not started that discussion? Susan Bilo, if you talk carbon dioxide, yeah. I mean, nuclear energy, small-scale modular nuclear yes. reactors, would you support something like that yes. being put in places like Colstrip or elsewhere?
People tend to have a love-hate relationship with nuclear energy, and I think mostly it's because of the old systems. And, you know, when they worked, and it was fine. You know, there were no greenhouse gases, that type of thing. But nuclear, even with the new technology, the small modular, they're still very expensive. They're cost prohibitive right now. Hopefully later the cost will come down because they could provide a beautiful, you know, base of electricity for us. But one thing I just want to mention real quick before I continue on that is that wind turbines can work in extreme cold. The American McMurdo Research Station in Antarctica has wind turbines. So they just have to be designed for the climate they're in, that type of thing. A natural gas plant in Texas went down when it was extremely cold. So any energy source needs to be weatherized for where they are and for extreme weather events that we're finding. But on nuclear, yeah, I think that in Montana, I know that the people used to have the choice on that, but the Gianforte administration passed a bill that made it to where our legislature could, you know, promote that. But it's just too cost prohibitive right now.
How could we make climate a consideration for all of these decisions without raising costs? You're going to just delay or add regulatory costs. How do we add that as a consideration without deliberately increasing the costs?
As I explained, if you took away the current subsidies for fossil fuels and renewables and you looked at them at what's called a levelized cost, where you can truly compare apples to apples, it takes a look at, okay, what is the overall cost, because they all are, you know, cost different amounts of money to make them, to operate them. Right now, I'm telling you, renewable energy has the cost have come down and it's cheaper. And because we don't use as much as we could, that's why our bills are higher.
Go ahead, Molnar, your thoughts on nuclear energy. We got about a minute before the break.
Okay, in 2021, we passed a study bill to study nuclear, particularly, I think, focused on placing it in Colstrip, so it tied into the transmission lines if Colstrip got shut down. It was such a can of worms. I watched two of the hearings. These people were calling names at each other. I mean, it was like this really Knesset more than anything. And they didn't even come up with a report at the end. There was nothing to report. Without massive subsidies at the federal level, you weren't going to have anything people could afford. And for the state to put it in and shut down Colstrip would have been a colossal right hook.
You certainly wouldn't want to shut down Colstrip. You'd want to add to it, add to what's already there.
Well, you have to have the transmission available. And if Colstrip's using it, the other isn't available.
That's right. All right. Any kind of power, you're going to need more transmission to get most of it to come online. Okay, we got to take a quick break here. We'll try to get to as many callers as we can, but our time is quickly passing us by.
Waking up on the right side. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Ask yourself some simple questions. These are not complicated questions. You know, were you better off than you were 4 years ago? Was the economy better off? Were you better off with inflation? Were you better off with interest rates? Inflation just went up another 3.3% year over year this past month. You know, even Lawrence Summers is saying that the Fed shouldn't have cut the interest rates 50 basis points because the economy hasn't recovered. in spite of it us being told it's transitory. All of these things matter. Are the borders more safe and secure? Is that question a joke?
From coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, it's the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, remember the old way of shopping for custom window treatments? You know, waiting around all day to get an overpriced quote from a pushy commission salesperson? Well, those days are over thanks to Blinds.com because they invented a better way. Now, with completely virtual consultations and free samples sent right to your door, you never have to deal with a salesperson in your home ever, ever again. You can always count on Blinds.com to deliver top quality window treatments. Now, from their premium woven wood to motorized shades, which I love, and so much more, you can get unlimited custom window treatments installed, whether it's one or 100, for one low cost. And at Blinds.com, there are never any hidden fees. The price you see on the website is the price that you pay. Ordering online may be scary to some of you, but not with Blinds.com because they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com right now. Get up to 45% off on select styles. Save up to 45% on select styles when you go to Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
6263. That's 406-201-6263. From the Soviet-style show trial against Attorney General Austin Knutson to the latest New York Times polling showing Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy with a big lead over Liberal Senator John Tester, we covered it all. Thursday morning, man, if you missed even a second of the show, you missed out. Thankfully, all of our Montana Talks show audio goes to our Montana Talks podcast. You can find it on
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
MontanaHunters.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio.
This is where Montana talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, this is probably our shortest segment of the hour here, so I don't know if we'll have time to get to all the callers. I talked with Jason and Polson during the break. He wants to know, hey, why isn't hydropower more of a part of the conversation here? And, of course, the Pacific Northwest dams have been under attack at the federal level. Goose and Anaconda wanting to talk about geoengineering and climate change. Richard and Billings called in wondering about the lifespan of batteries. Like I say, we'll try to get to callers, but we're probably too short on time. I told people we'd give a chance for you to ask a question to each other. Susan Bilo, do you have a question you want to throw towards Brad Molnar, and then Brad will have you get to throw a question to her as well?
So I'm going first. Okay. Well, actually, this is a really good question here for Brad, because he says that the PSC is not allowed by law to consider externalities. But I have in front of me Montana Code, annotated 2023, Integrated Least Cost Plan, and it says that alternative scenarios can be looked at, and when you determine cost effectiveness, the criteria may include externalities associated with the acquisition of a resource by a public utility. So my question is, do you not interpret that as allowing the PSC to consider externalities?
And then give us a 30-second response and then throw a question back to Susan there, Brad Molnar.
Yes, there's four places in the Montana Code that externalities, the word even appears. It's all in this one. Three of the four say we can't consider externalities. That one's the oldest one. And environmental externalities were never even considered at that point. So if you want to base your answer on one of four pieces of statute, you're using a sentence fragment to try and come up with it. Those statutes, the one we just passed last session, is very clear. We're not going to be allowed to do it. The fact that the law was written and didn't repeal that is not my fault. The vast majority of that is we can't do it.
And what question would you throw towards Susan?
Hey, you know, you're talking about the energy sector and basically how we're going to reform all of that to try and control climate. Per the oral arguments on the held case, Montana's contribution to worldwide population is 0.0019%. It's 1/1000th of a percent. We could shut Montana down. We're not going to accomplish any change in the world. So, A, why would we do that? B, the largest source of carbon emissions in Montana is agriculture. What would you do to agriculture to try and affect that 0.019%?
All right. Thanks for the question.
Well, ag producers are pretty progressive, and they're in tune with the land and nature, and many of them are doing things like regenerative farming because they understand the importance of the topsoil and how carbon can be released. So I think ag producers are part of the answer. Rural America is part of the answer for us. And for when you take a look at carbon dioxide, which is the main greenhouse gas, the generation of electricity in this country accounts for about 30% of it. It's second only to the transportation sector. And Montana does, you know, contributes enough of its share. I think it's unneighborly to say, well, we don't produce much, so we shouldn't have to tackle it. I think we all have a stake in tackling it because it impacts us negatively.
And we've got less than a minute to go now. Susan Bielow, how can voters learn more about you, campaign website, contact you, et cetera?
Yeah, yeah. My website is www.bielow, that's B as in boy, I-L-O, for the number four. PSC.com.
And State Senator Brad Molnar, likewise, how can folks get a hold of you, contact you, find out more?
Brad Molnar for PublicServiceCommission.com. For one, and my phone number, my personal phone number, my personal email is on the back of every brochure. If you live in Billings, you had one dropped at your door, give me a call.
All right. Well, great to see both of you. This was fun, and we're getting so many messages and calls. There's no way to sneak them all in, but this has been fun having both of you in here joining us. Yeah, thank you. All right, quick break. We're going to have phone lines open coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Plus, I think Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy, along with fellow veteran Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, might drop in and see us at some point as well.